Chris Gillam reminisces with former Canaries physiotherapist Tim Shepherd about his time with Norwich City Football Club and that famous victory against Bayern Munich.
So Tim, after you finished in Coventry, you came to Norwich in 1980, and there have been many highlights in your career. Perhaps the Milk Cup in 1985, does that stand out?
It does. It's one of the first highlights of my career there, Chris. I mean, coming to Norfolk, I was very fortunate. It was a club that, in the part of the world, I've really enjoyed coming to live. And when I go to all the other clubs in the country, as I did, I was very fortunate that it was Norwich that had the vacancy. So, but 1985 was just a wonderful experience of, you know, initially, one's watched football on TV, and in very early days of our lives, Chris, the only football you ever saw live on TV was the cup final. So then to be there running on the pitch and being part of this extravaganza of football and Norwich's delight in being at Wembley was a wonderful time and lovely experience.
And then, of course, came your, in 1993, that famous day, October the 20th, the 2-1 win over Bayern Munich at the Olympic Stadium in Munich. Must have been a wonderful occasion.
But that was a wonderful time as well. And, of course, then we didn't realise at the time, but playing at that stadium, the Bayern Munich have subsequently moved grounds.
They have.
Norwich City were the only club that ever beaten Bayern Munich at home in a European fixture in that original stadium. It was wonderful times, wonderful times. And we won the game, and wonderful little stories that come out afterwards, Chris. And my wife came to the match with some other people from Norfolk, and they were all told to be in a car park on a certain coach in a certain car park 45 minutes after the game. So as they came out, and then they got on the bus, and they waited and waited and waited for a Mr. Postal. Well, Mr. Postal never arrived. So they went back to the hotel and thinking, well, where is he? Anyway, he turns up next morning, gets on the coach, and everybody's ribald humour. Where were you last night? We waited in the car park for you. What's going on? He said, well, there's a bit of a tradition in football at certain grounds that you swap scarves. He said, so a lot of scarf swapping had been taking place, even though Norwich had won the game. So the Germans were pretty, what's the word? They were very lenient towards us in their attitudes. So he said, I came out of the ground and I thought, well, if I follow all the yellow scarves, I'll end up back at the bus station with my coach. He said, little did I know that so many Germans had so many Norwich scarves, I ended up in the middle of Munich. So he missed the bus. But it's those little stories that highlight a career and highlight an episode, Chris. It's just wonderful.
I can well imagine. Tell us why you were banned from the touchline in the second leg at Carrow Road.
Well, in the first match at in Munich, if you run onto the pitch, and if you can imagine being on one side of the pitch, and you run on the pitch to a player who's on the far side of the pitch, what I used to do, and I'd always done it at Carrow Road, if that player was a winger or a fullback on that side, on the far side of the pitch, I would stay crouched down on that side of the pitch till I was happy they were moving okay, communicate with them, everything was okay, and they'd carry on. And so what's the point of me running all the way back if he breaks down and you're on again? Well, that's illogical. So I stayed down, crouched on the side of the pitch. The linesman didn't like it. Go and sit down, go and sit down. I said, no, I'm just checking his player. He's going to be okay. Then I walked back. Then he communicated with the referee, and between them, they weren't very happy. So I then made my way back to the bench. The player was fine, thank goodness. And then subsequently, we got back to Norwich and had a letter from UEFA saying I'd got a one-match ban, and I'd been booked in the event. Well, I knew nothing about it. So I wasn't very happy. We made an appeal, and I missed the match.
But it was a one-all draw, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, but we'd won 2-1, so we won an aggregate, that's right.
Yeah.
But the great thing was, Chris, that my understudy at the football club, a chap called Keith Creamer, was a great help to me and a great support of the club. It gave him the opportunity to have some limelight, and he did the honours for that match at Carrow Road, and it's one of the highlights of his life. That was a silver lining.
So every story has a happy ending.
Yes, that's
excellent. You certainly met some characters in the game in your career. And obviously someone like Martin O'Neill must be one of the people who stands out as being a man who was constantly in the pursuit of excellence.
He was, and Martin is the most articulate, intelligent footballer that I've met in the game. And he had such a wicked sense of humour as well. But, you know, he's had a caustic side at times. But he has that ability of getting 110% out, extra 10% out of players that others can't get. And if you're there in one of those teams, like the Republic at the moment, they will, you know, run through brick wall for him. He's that good. But he had a wonderful put down as well. His humour, you know. I remember on a tour we were overseas, and there was one particular player who was a bit chippy and a bit chirpy and rather vociferous and inflated opinion of himself. And Martin said to him, he said, "I'll call this player. We'll call him John." Anyway, he said to Martin, said to him, "John, I think you should go to church in the morning." So John said, "Well, boss, you know, I don't go to church. I'm not a church goer." He said, "Why should I go to church?" He said, "Well, I think you should get there early." He said, pray for some ability." And it's that, you know, you don't forget those little snippets of humour, but the other characters of, you know, like Joe Royal, John Dean, Keith Burchin, these characters, just wonderful humour. But they all were really good pros, and they put themselves on the line for the club. And Steve Bruce and Dave Watson, you know, they were really tough people. They'd shake their heads and carry on. All but really like Joe Royal. Around Christmas, he said, "What are you doing? Are you not physio, medical, not having a party? Other clubs, we've had a party." I said, what do you mean, Joe?" He said, "Well, you know, they've collected a few drinks and a few fines, and we've raise a party, get all the staff and the players down the medical area and just have a bit of a bash after training." I said, "Well, we'll do that." So we gathered a few things together, and he said, "What about the music?" I said, "Well, the radio might be on." He said, "We'll solve that." He borrowed a van, and we went to his house out at Framingham Earl, and we got his jukebox in this van, and we brought the jukebox to Carr Road and put it up in the dressing room, and there it was. He was playing all afternoon, and these records were just fantastic. We had a great time. And though he was the sort of character that created an atmosphere that then players played for and gave that extra little bit that you've seen in sport.
Yeah.
And they are priceless, those
they
people.
They are.
And John Dean, Mick Shannon, those people could do that as well.
Yeah, they had the personality to bring others with them.
Yeah, very much.
And every team needs them.
Yeah.
However talented you are.
Okay, exactly. And they may not be the most, but they had that charismatic persona. And they would drag people along, and they would give more.
Yeah.
They really would. And the players, I felt in those days, you know, they looked after themselves and created that atmosphere better between themselves. You know, they had the court case if you misbehaved, and the players would sort it out. It's more of a cooperative of a team rather than looking now for the sort of overseeing coach, manager type. Joe Royal, if they had a night out and one player didn't turn up, next day he'd thump them on the shoulder. He said, "Where were you last night?" You know, a team that drinks together wins together.
Yes. Do you think that goes on now?
I think if it does, it's done behind closed doors and it's not quite so open. But no, I think it's slightly different these days.
Yeah, well, like, you know, going back to the rugby, you know, you understand that half the England rugby squad don't drink.
I know, so it's very sad, isn't it?
Well, I think so, personally. That's great. We have to skip over some of the time, obviously, but your career culminated in a testimonial given to you by the club in 2001, and Celtic were the visitors at Carrow Road under Martin O'Neill then, of course.
Yeah.
And 15,000 people turned up, and that's really an indication of the esteem in which you were held by the Norwich City fans, I think.
Well, modestly, I'd like to think so, and I was very pleased that the club bestowed that honour on me and having a testimonial, Chris, and obviously my contact with Martin, and he kindly agreed to use that game as a mid-season game for them because they'd had a break. So it worked out very well, and I got on very well with Martin, and I was ever so grateful, and it was a kind way at the club to showing thank you to me, and obviously I was very appreciative of it, and it was a great night. But I mean, the whole day started so bizarrely, you know, the ground staff of all the stories, Chris, of the groundsman was in the wandering around the back of the River End stand. Of course, it was all open then with the car park around those flats now. And there was one solitary car in the middle of the car park. The groundsman went across. This is strange, a car here this time of day. So he went across and he tapped on the window, and there's this chap there in this car messing with a bowl and a spoon and a can. He said, "I'm sorry to trouble you, sir." He said, "We've got to clear the car park because there's a game tonight and we want to move the cars out of the way." He said, "Just wondering what you're doing here at 8:30 in the morning." And I won't impersonate a Scottish accent, Chris. This chap had driven from Glasgow for the game, and he was sat in the car park having his breakfast. And he was pouring a can of McEwan's lager on his cornflakes. Unbelievable. You can write these things, could you?
No,
later on in the afternoon, there was a crowd of Scots in a van, came on the car park. Said, "Sorry, you can't leave it there. Could you move it? You know, there's a game tonight. We're just letting the public come on this." And back to Scottish accent, which I won't do. He said, "Oh, no." He said, "Well, you can have the keys. You can have the van." And these six lads got out and headed for the local bar. And the groundsman said, "Well, you can't leave the van there." He said, "Why not?" He said, "We nicked it in Glasgow last night." He said, "Well, how are you going to get home?" He said, "Well, we'll nick another one and go home." It was just priceless stories.
Absolutely.
Chris,
absolutely.
So it was a wonderful night, and it was very appreciative.
Yeah, well, I think not only the fans held you in high esteem, but I think obviously Martin O'Neill did too, because he made that effort. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I've kept in touch with him since, and they kindly invited me up to an Old Firm match, Glasgow Rangers Celtic, up at in Celtic for Celtic's home match, and that was a wonderful occasion. So that was very kind of him. So good relationship.
Good, that's very good to hear. Now, of course, one of the questions I have to ask you is, why did you finish in the first place?
Well, I think probably about a year before this, when the seeds were sown, I'd been very much aware that I was restricted in what I could see of my family, my parents particularly, whilst being down in Norfolk and being tied at weekends and trips at the end of the season meant that sort of my trips up to North to see my parents was a bit of a vacuum in my life, really. And I think I felt very guilty living 250 miles away, and they didn't see as much of their grandchildren as they would have liked, and I would have liked, and they would have liked. So, and then my mum died about a year, so that was late 2000, and that area then. And so consequently, that pricked my conscience a bit, and I thought, no, you know, we're only here once. And the things I was missing out on, like children growing up, taking them to university, doing other things. The weekends, you can't do that in a football club.
No, no.
And of course, you know, as you get older, the age gap between me and the players was widening. So my tolerance to their behaviour and some of their language was running a bit thin. And being away on a coach so much in hotels, after a while, you know, you think, got the T-shirt.
Starts to pall a bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was the right decision, and you know when you make a big decision and you know it's right straight away, and I felt it straight, like a breath. Yeah, I knew it was right.
Yeah.
So no regrets, but I had a great time, and I'm very appreciative to the football club and the supporters for their kindness ever since.
And now you're running a successful practice.
Yeah, well, I had a brief break when I left the club, and then I've worked in private practice. I worked initially from home, and then I work at the Global Clinic at Coney Hall now. And I'm cutting down now to 50% time, and so I can do a bit more of what I want to do. But, you know, the clock is ticking, isn't it? So there's other things in life I must do.
Well, that's right. Tim, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Tim Shepherd, former Norwich City Football Club physiotherapist.